Yeah, the NBA restart tomorrow in the bubble. Warriors are not in the bubble, but they will be in the upper portions, presumably, of the NBA draft. So let's talk both with our 95.7 NBA insider, Anthony Slater. Anthony, it's been a long time. How are you doing these days?
I'm good. I just are you sure you guys don't want to continue that optimistic look at the Giants roster? Bright days.
Listen,
there.
You watched the team go 15-50, and they want to see all the great things that emerged from a team that played, what was it, 270 basketball?
You mean Hunter Pence shouldn't be a cleanup hitter in 2020? No? Okay.
Oh, no, I think he should be a cleanup hitter in 2025 with this team.
Wow.
For a double-A right. team. All right.
No, this team.
Talk hoops. You guys want to talk hoops?
Yeah, we do, Anthony. Thank you. Let's start here. We've been hearing for months that the NBA draft talent, not that great this year. That said, you put together a very interesting piece that we saw today. How good of a fit for the Warriors would James Wiseman be, as far as we can tell?
I think good. I mean, part of the piece I wrote today was like the unknown of Wiseman, right? Sometimes we just want to have strong opinions on people that we probably shouldn't have. James Wiseman has played 69 minutes. That is a very small basketball sample size. So, it probably took me 90 minutes to watch all of James Wiseman's college possessions. So I don't want to have too strong an opinion. But when you look on the film, you see a 7'1" dude that is quicker than any other big man on the court. He is super explosive off the jump. He's killing guys in transition. He's blocking a ton of shots against bad competition. But guys with 7'6" wingspans that can jump like that are just going to block a lot of NBA shots. And then I think, again, small sample size, I was actually impressed with the jumper. He took 4 jumpers in 3 games, but he made all 3 of his mid-rangers. And I don't want to keep too much praise on him, but it looks a little Chris Bosh-y to me. The big lefty with like a smooth, release. He's only 19. I understand center is devalued in the modern NBA, but center's clearly the biggest hole on this roster. That's the most unknown moving forward. It's the only place they don't have a max guy signed long-term. So I think he is the fit, honestly.
What kind of tweaking, though, will Steve Kerr have to do sort of philosophically to fit him in a way that will maximize all the things he does well?
I think some of that will depend on his passing. I put it in the story, but he had 1 assist, but it was a sweet one. It was like in transition, head up, pinpoints a cross court, fast break pass to a shooter in the corner, and it was like, man, he seems to have vision. Now you watch the rest of the game, and he had guys open, but he wanted to go to the rim. Partly is because he's facing 6'7" centers from UIC, and he's just dunking every time. But if he can pass, why can't he do dribble handoffs with Steph? And he's very mobile. If he can shoot, he could be a spacer. And then I would say the other thing is maybe long term, Kerr, if Wiseman is the guy that if he hits the ceiling, and he could be a bust, but if he hits the ceiling, then maybe you have to kind of reform as Steph ages and his core ages, and then suddenly Wiseman is your franchise face, let's say, in 2023. But next year, couldn't he just be JaVale McGee? The Warriors didn't have to rearrange their style for JaVale McGee. They just told him, hey, you're faster than the other centers. Run the floor really hard. You're going to get a lot of alley-oops because you're on the floor with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. Crush the alley-oops, block some shots, and run the floor. And you don't really have to change your style for that.
Anthony Slater, the guest, and people should read Anthony's article about Wiseman, because I think you did an incredible job of isolating sort of all the specific things that make him, I agree with you, the fit if you're going to take a pick in this draft. And that's actually what I wanted to ask you about, because it seems like, and correct me if I'm wrong, you feel like the right decision is use this draft pick on a young player. Can you explain that thought process as opposed to trying to mortgage it for someone who's more helpful today?
Yeah, well, this is a very rare opportunity for a team in their mid-contender window. Usually dynasties like the Warriors, when they fade out, you go from the best team in basketball to the 20th best team in basketball to the 15th best. So you get the 20th pick, the 15th pick. It's very rare right in the middle, of where you still expect to contend in the next few years. You're going to get a guaranteed top 5 pick, maybe even the first overall pick. We'll know in about 3 weeks. that to me is not an opportunity to say, hey, Steph Curry, let's get you Tyrese Halliburton to help you out for 20 minutes. This guy was, you know, we could say a high floor as a prospect, or high floor, but a pretty low ceiling. You know, long term, I don't see him becoming an all-star like a Wiseman. So to me, I think this is the pick you try to get the the guy that will be potentially your best player in 2024, because this is the only time you're going to probably get a top five pick. And then you use the other tool you have, the $17.2 million trade exception, the mid-level. That's when you try to round out the rotation in the immediate, the seventh man, the eighth man. I think you go star hunting now, because that's what you do with the top five pick.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah, that hurts Anthony Slater, because I've been on the Halliburton bandwagon for a while here. But all kidding aside, one of the things I like about him is his defense. But how high is improving defensively on the Warriors' offseason to-do list? I mean, if they want to be legitimate contenders again, the defense has to improve a lot to get back to that level, right?
Yeah, you pretty much, you know, historically have to be kind of a top 10 defense to really be a true title contender. You're talking about, you like Halliburton's defense or Wiseman's defense?
Well, I like Halliburton's defense, to be honest, but yeah. I understand Wiseman. How would he, a center, rookie center, I mean, how good can he be defensively? You're talking about him just as a rim protector?
Yeah, well, look, he's going to block shots. The Warriors lost that with Durant leaving. I know we all kind of know Kevin Durant is the scorer, but remember, he was a top 10 shot blocker. The Warriors, in all three seasons that Kevin Durant was there, were number one in team blocks in the NBA. This past season, they were 20th. They have an extreme lack of rim protecting. And now, that doesn't make you a great team defender. You know, Hassan Whiteside led the NBA in blocks this year. He's not a great team defender. I worry about Wiseman against a team like the Rockets. I mean, what do you think James Harden is going to do? Drag him right into an isolation? Go at him. And I think he has the tools long-term, and he could potentially have the teaching with like a Ron Adams of becoming a pretty good switch defender. You know, like Gobert, I think, has gotten a lot better over the years. To me, his upside defensively is a Gobert. It's a pretty good upside defensive player of the year. He won't be terrific next year. But, to me, that doesn't mean you don't go after the star of the draft because you think, well, you might get a helpful defender for your eighth man and a guy like Halliburton.
Do you have a educated guess on how the Warriors prioritize the rest of the top end of this draft if they don't get Wiseman?
I think that the first thing they want to know is where they're picking. And then they kind of need to discover the motives of these other teams. And once they get the order of the draft, which means how valuable is their pick, you know, the first pick compared to the fifth is very different. And then I think they want to, particularly how Orlando plays out is going to dictate how some of these teams that are in Orlando attack their off seasons. Who's going to be available for trade? Who's not? What's the financial situations for not only the Warriors, but what's the financial situation for the other teams? What type of pieces are they willing to sell off? They're going to know a lot more of that in the 3 weeks leading up to the draft, which will maybe dictate, should they make a trade? Should they, you know, go after a guy? As far as how they're prioritizing it, I mean, look, I think they, in their dream world, they would get a wing with who can help next year and could potentially become a star. I mean, you could want to believe Anthony Edwards could maybe become that. Isaac Okoro is probably like a safer, like I said, like a higher floor, lower ceiling type of guy. I think there's a want to try to convince themselves of that. But the truth is they know it's kind of a weak draft, particularly at the wing position. So it might end up being that they want to trade down. But we don't know. There's so much still to play out.
Well, then let me ask this. Given that it's a weak draft and given that the entire basketball world is in chaos right now, how easy would it be to trade down if they end up, say, fourth and they don't like what's waiting for them there?
I would say it depends on who and what is available. And, I don't know necessarily. I floated out the idea, and, you know, maybe this will make Whitey happy because it includes Halliburton, but I have floated out the idea if the Suns don't jump up in the lottery, which we need to know. But let's say the Suns stay at around 10, 11. You know, the Warriors use the exception to go Oubre, and they pick swap with Phoenix, go down to 10. But I don't know, you know, Phoenix sold their G League team today, so maybe they really are just selling off, you know, contracts. Obviously, there's, you know, what's Houston's ownership situation going to be, Minnesota. So it's just a lot of it's going to depend on the appetite of these other franchises to still pay what they have on their books, or are they just going to be kind of shedding contracts? And also, I mean, we should probably talk about the Warriors' financial situation. It is not in its most secure situation right now either.
So you've been doing sort of a what the Warriors might do this offseason series over the course of the last few weeks. And I read all of it, but I guess my question would be, of all the guys you considered for them, who do you think would be the most likely and also the most helpful?
Oh, man, helpful? I'm early in the process, but I do like the Oubre idea. I think they kind of need that more electric bench score that they don't have. He's a wing. Mm-hmm. You know, he would be a rental. Maybe, you know, you would get his rights, so you could pay him long-term, but he'd be on a one-year deal. If they went stretch five, I don't hate the idea of Kelly Olynyk. They do need a center who can shoot, playing next to Draymond Green, who's, you know, can't shoot really anymore.
So guys named Kelly, basically.
Yeah. I would also say it was the first name I did. It's not sexy, but I think it's good as a mid-level option, Mo Harkless. You know, mm-hmm. he's just going to play 25 decent minutes for you on the wing. He's going to be able to guard fours in a small ball lineup next to Draymond Green. It's just you're not going to be able to go out and get a Fred VanVleet. And I don't think you're going to be able to trade for a Bradley Beal. It's certainly not a Giannis in this offseason. So the names may not sparkle to Warriors fans, but they just need to find guys that can help in the playoff.
Anthony Slater with us on 95.7 The Game. Understand that you're going to be covering the Lakers, the bubble Lakers. How damaging, the defections they've already experienced, how damaging are they going to be, do you think, to LeBron's championship hopes here the rest of the way?
I don't think the Rondo one really hurts, honestly. He's kind of living off his name a bit. He's not really that good anymore. And, like, Dion, you know, I've watched all three of their scrimmage games, and, you know, I'm kind of a little bit halfway into Lakers land right now, and I've been writing a bit about Dion Waiters and all their fans. It's only been three scrimmage games, and we know how fans overreact, but they already think Waiters is an upgrade over Rondo. And J.R. Smith actually hit 6 threes in a scrimmage the other day. I mean, I'm a little wait and see on him, but you guys have seen. I mean, J.R. had some huge finals games next to LeBron for Cleveland against the Warriors. So they have some potential options there. What I'm concerned about is Avery Bradley. He was their defensive pest on scoring guards, and that just doesn't, you know, they don't really have a replacement for that. Luka Doncic killed them in a scrimmage the other day. Down the road, they might have to face Harden and Westbrook and the Rockets in the second round. Might even have to face Damian Lillard in the first round if Portland has a good seeding. So I think scoring guards are going to kind of have their way a bit with the Lakers, and that's where I'm worried about them. But they still have two of the top five players in basketball, which makes them a clear, you know, in that top tier of favorites.
But if you're worried about scoring guards, that top tier has some scoring guards. And specifically, yeah. If I'm looking at the Lakers – I mean, Avery Bradley probably would have been asked to defend either Kawhi or Paul George, right? Whoever LeBron doesn't take, that would have been Bradley. They have nobody to do that.
Yeah, no, I mean, Danny Green. You know, I like Danny Green guarding one of those guys, but you're right. I am concerned in that Lakers-Clippers matchup, which most people believe will be the West Finals.
And Lou Will, too, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. Although Lou Will's got a guard on the other end, which is a concern. But,
true.
You know, I don't like that LeBron's going to have to guard, from a Lakers perspective, that LeBron's going to have to guard one of those two, because as we've seen, that was the big issue playing the Warriors, was like when Kevin Durant arrived and he couldn't just kind of sleep on defense so he could put all his energy into offense. He was like pretty bad defensively on KD in those finals. And that's why Durant would just go 35, 36, efficient every night. So, yeah, that's a concern. I think Davis is underrated, though. I've been watching him in the scrimmages. I watched a ton of Laker tape during the season. Because he's such a subdued personality and he's in the LeBron orbit, we don't talk about him that much. He is a definite top five player, top three defensive player of the year candidate. He's an easy 28 and 12 every night. I think he's going to have a really good few months down there.
You alluded earlier to the Warriors' sort of financial situation, which was always considered bulletproof until this happened. And it harkens back to the the Brian Windhorst piece about how many teams are now concerned about liquidity and cash flow going forward. Does this, I mean, I know you can't really get into, you know, what the Warriors situation is because they don't share that with anybody. But would this, do you think this would be a sign that perhaps the Warriors are now suddenly going to become cash conscious? Because it doesn't look, if they're even talking about starting next year with a bubble, that means even more time when they can't start filling a building that they still, you know, haven't paid off yet. I mean, do you think Joe Lacob is suddenly going to become the guy who says no rather than the guy who says yes?
Yeah, I mean, this already kind of happened before the pandemic. They ducked the tax this year. It was smart to do. They were not good. Why do you want to be a tax team when you're not good? They did it to make sure they were out of the luxury tax, but they've already shown, like, you know, they will, if needed, make small money maneuvers. Now you drop this on their head, which is, you know, cataclysmic financially for every, you know, most businesses across the globe. And yeah, the Warriors make more than any other team with fans in the arena. They expected Chase Center to be just shoveling money in, and not just for NBA games. They're supposed to have concerts all summer. You know, the Eagles and stuff. I looked at the concert schedule. There was supposed to be some great ones this summer, and that's gone from a certain amount of money that they had already calculated in to zero money. Now, will that make them not spend big this summer? I don't know. You could argue one of two ways. If they borrow the money, maybe it's borrow the money to make sure they can spend, or it should be a warning sign to all of us that, you know, they may, like you said, kind of tighten up the wallet a bit. But I think that answer comes with more information about when exactly fans are going to be back in Chase Center. And that story is evolving. It seems every day. It seems like it's getting less optimistic every day, but the truth is I still think financially they're in a pretty secure spot if we take a wider scope view of it. Because once fans are in Chase Center, that thing is going to make them so much money. It's going to be painful until then, but I think by 2026 or whatever, 2025, whatever long-term date you want to put on it, they're going to be back being a cash cow.
As we head into actual official bubble play tomorrow, we're not supposed to consider that for any of the awards, so who you got?
I mean, Giannis is MVP. I think that's pretty fair. I actually think LeBron might have had a road to it because Giannis actually got hurt right before the pause. Mm-hmm. LeBron had just beat him, and like it felt like the narrative was building, but no. MVP is going to be Giannis. Any other awards you're interested in?
The Rookie of the Year, Ja Morant.
Yeah, I know they've tried to make like the Zion, and he was the best player in the 19 games he played, but you can't give it to him. It's got to be Ja.
Was he on your ballot at all?
I think you could put him third just because it almost like if you want to tell the story of the season and long term, you're just like, he existed that season. We should probably acknowledge him. You know what's interesting? I saw this report by Tim Bontemps. Their guys, rookies who haven't played yet and play in the bubble will be eligible next season. It's not out of the realm of possibility. Bol Bol has just an explosion down there in Orlando and then comes back next season and then wins Rookie of the Year next season.
Huh. What about Michael Porter Jr.? Is he still eligible for Rookie of the Year?
He's amazing.
Oh, not after his latest Snapchat. No, because he actually played. Bol Bol never played a minute before.
All right, Anthony Slater, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for the wonderful piece on Wiseman. Very interesting, great video. We appreciate it. Stay safe. We hope to talk to you again soon.
All right, fellas. Thanks, Greg.